Hi, this is Steve again, and today we're going to talk about time and money. Now, a lot of people say time is money, and I like hearing that because it really tells me that people see the relationship. Maybe it's not literally true that time is money, but they see the relationship. When I'm going to shift from not creating enough wealth to creating more than enough wealth, which is what the wealth warrior movement is all about, when I'm going to make that shift, I want to make sure that I see the relationship between time and money. I want to make sure that I don't leave that behind or forget about that. Really, it's how I use my time that's going to determine the wealth I create. So, if you've read Time Warrior, which I recommend, not just to bring royalties to me, but actually to have you understand creating wealth in a clearer way. I wrote the book Time Warrior before writing Wealth Warrior because I thought it was very important that people understood the role of time and the nature of time when they were attempting to create a successful life. And the main premise inside Time Warrior is non-linear time management, as opposed to all the other time management systems and thought patterns and mindsets, which are very, very linear. Start with point A, go to point B, go to point C. So linear time management sees your life as a linear line, a horizontal line. It starts at birth, and then you just have one event after another, and it ends in death. So it's very linear. And the problem with seeing all of life as linear is that you're always either looking out ahead into your future, which creates anxiety, as we all know, or turning back and looking at the past, which usually creates regret and guilt. So these are my choices. I can look ahead and be an anxious, worried person, or I can look back over my shoulder and feel guilty or regret things. Those are my two choices. Now, how am I going to be super creative coming from those two points? I'm just not. So this whole linear approach, looking out ahead, looking into my negative imaginary future, worrying, being anxious, then getting excited about possibilities, and then worrying, and then getting fearful, or turning back, I wish I hadn't done it that way, feeling guilty, feeling regret. I don't want to live my life that way, and I don't want to relate to time that way. I want to maximize today. I want to live in the now, as Eckhart Tolle says. Now, you can live in the now in a very spiritual sense and learn how to meditate and return to the present moment and be a Zen master. But here we're talking about creating wealth. How does living in the now relate to creating wealth? It's really important because it does. And it's what I call non-linear time management. So if I'm linear, I'm either looking back on the line into the past, on the horizontal line, or I'm looking forward into my imaginary future, which very quickly goes negative and creates anxiety, as the brain is so good at picturing worst-case scenarios whenever it looks at the future. That's not a creative leverage point. So Time Warrior was about rising up, not living horizontally, not crawling like a worm from point A, my birth, event, 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 point B, my death, on a linear line, but rather rising up like an eagle or a bird, rising up in the moment. It's a vertical life. And rising up in the moment means slowing down and seeing the opportunity in front of me. And that's non-linear. Being in the moment is non-linear. Being in my own future or being in my own past is linear. So non-linear time management is very powerful and very effective for people who switch over to it. But it requires something. It requires an acknowledgement that my overwhelm my too big to-do list comes from me, and it's just a thought, and it's just a concept, and if it's going to change, I have to change. Circumstance does not have to change. This angered a lot of people who bought Time Warrior and hoped it was a bunch of tips on how to rearrange the deck chairs, how to rearrange circumstance so circumstance is better. That's what most time management programs are. How do you channel circumstance into a new system with post-it notes and all kinds of tickler files and things like that? And that's rearranging deck chairs, and that's honoring circumstance. The outside. In other words, it's a life of outside in. Non-linear time management, like Time Warrior, really says you're the problem if there's a problem. And you want to start from the inside out, because once you get clear, life gets clear. This angered a lot of people. Of course it did. I mean, most people in the world live from the outside in. They're not going to readily accept a program that says it's you that creates the problem. They're not going to accept that. They want you to agree that life is hard, life is difficult, life is a burden, life is a curse. How do I sort of manage it better? That's the book they want. They don't want my book. So when you go on Amazon, you see a lot of just really wild reviews like, oh my gosh, this book has no value, blah, blah. Well, to that person, it didn't. I apologize. I gave you a system too soon in your evolution. You know, if I were coaching you individually, I wouldn't just hand you the book. I would see where you were on your evolutionary path toward personal development, and I wouldn't push you out ahead of your own evolution. But you can't do that with a book. You have to go for it and put it all in there, and that's what I did. Now, that's what I'm doing with this book, too. So wealth comes from first mastering time and knowing how to rise up and knowing how to live in the moment. Now, how does that produce wealth? Well, I want to give you a quick example of non-linear, slowing down, living in the moment time management. So many times, and it's happened with me and with clients of mine, there is opportunity that I miss because I'm living in my own future instead of being here with you right now. Many times, when I finally slow down and rise up, I see that the email you have sent me is actually an invitation for me to really do some good work with you and your company, instead of some kind of annoyance or some kind of thing that I raced through and gave you a quick answer to and moved on into my own future. This is true for people I work with. They say they don't have any business. They say they don't have customers to work with. And when I look over their last 2 or 3 weeks of email, we find out that that's not true. There are a lot of people who between the lines are asking for help, and we didn't see it. There's a lot of opportunity in what's occurring right now. And if I'm managing my time and my mind in a linear way, I won't see it. I won't see this opportunity. I'll miss it because I'm not here. I'm not right here in this moment right now, listening to you, understanding your problem deeply. So often, a company will have a deep problem, and they think all they need is a one-hour talk from me. So I say, here's my fee for a one-hour talk, and they say, fine, come on in, and that's it. And I move on looking for clients. I didn't really hear what the person was saying. If I'd been in the moment, and I had risen up to really see how I could serve this person, I would have heard that they have ongoing systemic structural problems in that business, and that I could come in and coach some people and put together a whole program for them. I didn't see that because I was in my own future. So wealth starts with time. And really understanding non-linear time management versus linear time management. Another way to say non-linear time management is do the thing in front of you. Do the thing that's right here, right now, to the best of your ability. And that will produce many benefits, many referrals, many wonderful things. instead of just kind of skipping it over and doing a half-hearted, halfway job, I will get no referrals. I have a good friend who's in the world of coaching. He's built his whole coaching practice on referrals only. He doesn't market, he doesn't sell, he doesn't network. He just sits with and focuses on the client who's in front of him. And he does such a thorough job that they go back out into their world and they talk about him. They tell their friends, they tell their business associates, and the next thing he knows, he's getting phone calls from people who say, "We hear you are amazing. Can I have lunch and see if you can help my company?" And so all of his business has grown from referral because he gets it that time does not have a long linear future and a long linear past. It really is right here, right now. Another way to marry time and money so they both interrelate and the use of your time produces money is to have good questions you're always asking. Good questions, such as, how can I use this? What's good about this? How can I contribute to this person's life? How can I serve this person? And those questions, if I stay there throughout my day, will lead to a lot of wonderful things. Because money comes from service. And how can I serve if I'm not looking for how I can serve? So rather than taking a customer complaint and wondering how do I get rid of this guy or how do I satisfy this guy or how do I make him happy, I want to ask deeper questions. How can I serve future customers by correcting this person's complaint? How can I really serve this person into the future? What's good about this complaint? How can I use this? Those are creative questions that artists ask. Artists will look at the palette of paints and spot a blue they haven't used in a painting and ask themselves, how can I use this? I love this blue. I love how it would go with what I've got here. How can I use it? And so many times, the question, how can I use this, leads to some kind of creative solution or a creative building block that leads to wealth. Now, most people don't ask these questions, which is why I like to teach people and remind myself and teach myself good questions when things occur throughout the day. Given my definite major purpose, how can I use this? Given what I'm up to, how can I use this? What's good about this? How can I serve this person? What could I do that would astonish that person? I have a friend, a colleague, a client named Darby Checkets. He's an author, a wonderful coach, and a great teacher. His focus is customer relations. That's his specialty. And he created a really powerful distinction called customer astonishment. Now, customer astonishment requires that you not get out into your own future and try to do a million things every day, but that you be creative. And you ask yourself, what would astonish this person? Instead of just, what would satisfy this person and make them go away? So what would astonish them? Now, the beauty of that question is that it calls forth my most creative thinking. What would astonish them? Now, that really has me thinking out of the box, because it's not easy to astonish somebody. I mean, when you astonish someone, it's astonishing. It's not an easy thing to do. Therefore, it calls on your best creativity. And that's why it's such a great program. Now, when Darby has introduced his customer astonishment program, even just as a principle, into companies or individuals who have clients and customers, all of a sudden their business increases, their income increases. Because all of a sudden their customers are astonished, surprised. Now here's the beauty of a surprised person. Here's the beauty of using the element of surprise in your work. It's really effective. And people who are surprised, they talk. People who are just satisfied don't talk. Because they're satisfied, there's nothing to talk about. That's why when companies or individuals have as their principle, their operating principle, customer satisfaction, it doesn't lead to referrals. It doesn't lead to buzz in the marketplace because the customer's just satisfied. Nobody talks when they're satisfied. They don't spread the word that they've been satisfied. It's not natural. But when you astonish somebody, when they're really surprised by something, they go tell people. They can't get it out of their mind. And so therefore, if I have a business or a service, I want to continually ask myself, how might I astonish this customer as opposed to simply satisfy him? And this is a great question to ask. Any question that takes me out of my victim pose and pulls me back into my owner position where I'm creating, it has my brain creating throughout the day, creating solutions, creating service, creating astonishing things for customers, and that creative mind produces wealth. It's the reactive victim mind that just keeps me going month to month, same income, a little lower income, same income, a little lower income. That comes from victim reacting. That comes from simply reacting to circumstance around me in the world, not creating anything. And these questions call forth creative thinking. I can actually inspire creative thinking through asking myself certain good questions. How can I astonish this person? What would serve this person? How can I use this circumstance? What's good about this? A lot of people ask me, okay, I hear you're a coach. What do you do? What do you mean you're a coach? My simplest, most honest answer is I help people make money. At least that's my specialty. That's what I like to do. That's what gives me the most satisfaction. Any other kind of coaching isn't fun for me. I like coaching that helps people make money. That's just my favorite thing. Now, I know many other coaches who have a much wider spectrum. These are life coaches and coaches who help people create relationships and coaches who help people find their spiritual path. There are coaches who help people physically. They help lead them to create stronger bodies and greater conditioning. There are coaches who do all kinds of really wonderful things, and they're worth every penny. My focus with other people, only because I love it, is to help them make money. It always has been. And I got clearer and clearer on that as my life moved forward. I want to help people make money. Now, on the way to making money, of course, there are some times when certain relationship problems have to be cleared up because they're dragging me down. They're having me lose my focus. I'm not in a clearer place to make money if my mind is filled with a relationship issue. So, of course, we deal with that. But really, the focus is on making money. Now, one thing when I have a new client, I always like to do is to get rid of their dreams. See, I don't want my client walking around with a lot of dreams, not for the work I do. I want to hear about the dream. We can't get rid of it if we don't hear about it, if we don't see it, isolate it. I want to hear about your dream. What is your dream? What would you really like to do? And now that we've heard about it, I want to capture it on a whiteboard. Because I'm going to ask you a question. Are you willing to convert this dream into a project? Because if you are, I'll coach you. But if it's going to remain a dream, I'm not going to coach you. I don't want to coach people who have vague longings and dreams and spin around the bedpost at night picturing their North Star or unicorns or anything like that. That's not fun for me. It is for some coaches. But I want to convert your dream into a project. I'm more of a project manager than I am a life coach. Life coaching is a big spectrum name for coaches who have lots of different specialties. I'm more of a project manager. And if you have a dream, I want it to be converted into a project. And one of the fastest ways to convert a dream into a project is to ask yourself, what's the next small step? Now, this is really one of the reasons I like the work of David Allen. I mean, when I wrote Time Warrior, there was no way I was going to truly improve upon the work he did. I simply went in a bit of a different direction. But I love his work on time management because he focuses always on the next action. And that's just one action, and I love that. Just one next action. And I love making it as small as you can, not as big as you can. Because now we've got the project going. Now we are in project status. And the dream is gone because the dream is now a project. So dreaming and wishing and hoping are victim activities in the mind. These are fantasies of the victim mind, while the victim really doesn't do much. Whereas back over on the ownership side of the world, there are plans and projects, and especially next action. What's the next step? So I love the work that Rich Litvin does with people. He's a coach I admire. And the work he does is tell me your dream, dream big, talk about it, and then now, what's the smallest step you can possibly take? Smallest you could possibly take toward that dream. Because what he really does when he does that with a client is he puts the client on the path. And here's the most important thing I know about achieving wealth. That pot of gold at the end of the rainbow is really at the end of a path that you choose to be on or don't. Here's the problem. Most people can identify a path that would lead to wealth. The problem is they keep going off the path. It's what Napoleon Hill calls drifting. Napoleon Hill wrote a book called Outwitting the Devil. And the devil manifested itself in people's lives whenever they would be drifting off the path. So if you stay on the path, you have to get to where you want to go. No matter how slow you're walking, you don't have to run. You'll get there. But the problem is, people all day long are going off the path, sidetracked, drifting. People are calling them off the path, as a matter of fact. People along the side of the road yelling, beckoning them, please come, please me, win my approval. And so the path is not followed. So if you have a dream and you really want to use a time warrior's approach to creating wealth, what you'll do is you'll immediately convert your dream into a project or throw it out. Either one is fine with me. And once you have a project, what's the first small step? Let's say your dream is to write a book. Well, what's the next small step? Maybe you're going to buy a notebook to put thoughts in that are going to end up being your book. So actually going to an office supply store and choosing the right notebook for you has converted your dream into a project. It is now a project being executed by you through the actions you're taking. That's exciting. That's a good life. As opposed to a life of wishing, hoping, dreaming, fantasizing, all of that stuff. That's a miserable life. We don't want hope to be what we focus on all day. That's a linear life. That's a life dominated by a negative imaginary future. I want to have my dream be part of my day, not part of my future.